Welcome to the Whole Hog Podcast.
My main concern is I just want to do the best damn job I can for the University of Arkansas.
I got a question for you, though, Scotty. Do you know that there's other players on our team besides Desi?
Whoever we had on the plane is all we need. Turn that damn jukebox. Turn it up!
Now, here's your host, Seth Campbell.
Welcome into the Whole Hog Podcast. Seth Campbell joined, as always, by Scotty Bordelon. We'll be joined by Matt Jones later in the podcast. And Scotty, the big news of Arkansas football this week is the COVID protocols. And so, you know, are you ready? I've got some groundbreaking inside knowledge here. Arkansas has two support staff out with COVID. One person tested positive for COVID. And there is significant, or I don't necessarily know significant, there are people that are quarantining due to contact tracing. Boom. There it is.
That's I thought you were going to say the big news was Desi Sills being named preseason All-SEC second team by the league's coaches.
That is big.
I got excited.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, just a shameless plug here, is going to come out next week. So you should definitely take a listen to that. It'll get you ready for basketball season, which normally would already be underway. There was a game a year ago today. I think they're playing like UTSA. No, they're playing somebody, but I can't remember who.
Something else that popped up in my Facebook memories. I didn't go to sleep until really late because of the NBA draft on Wednesday, but I looked at my Facebook memories, and I think it was 6 years ago today, Arkansas's football program took out a full-page ad on the back of the Arkansas Traveler, kind of thanking fans and the students for the support after Arkansas broke its, you know, however long losing streak in the SEC.
Wasn't it 20?
With a 17-0 win over LSU. Yeah, it was a pretty cool ad.
Nice. Well, we got a loaded show for you. As I said, COVID is the talk of the town right now here in Fayetteville. We do not know who is quarantined. Inside sources are being very quiet about all of that. So we're going to talk, you know, that is going to have an effect on the game. The problem is, and like, I don't mean to disappoint you, the listener, but we just don't know. And it's unfortunate, but we don't know the impact of, because whoever is not playing in this game is going to make an impact. It would make an impact for any team, but Arkansas especially is just not deep enough to have, you know, guys missing, especially a significant amount of guys, if it is significant. So that'll be something to keep your eyes on, peeled for Saturday morning, an 11 a.m. kick against LSU. But we can talk about some other stuff. So we're going to get into Felipe Franks a little bit. Traylon Smith, Rakeem Boyd, we talked about it on the Reaction podcast against Florida. We'll talk about it a little bit more here on the Whole Hog Podcast. And then Matt Jones is going to join us a little bit later. All right, Scotty, let's just get right into it. And the fact of, I think that Traylon Smith, the more that I've listened to Pittman and the more that I've just kind of gone through this week, I think he might get the start on Saturday.
It's very possible. I mean, it's tough to disagree that with Traylon Smith being the best running back that Arkansas's had in like recent weeks. I think, you know, Rakeem Boyd ran for 100 yards at a touchdown against Texas A&M, but Traylon Smith has been the last 3 weeks really consistent. And I remember the Tennessee game, he only had like, I think, 8 or 9 carries, but he ran for 72 yards. Like, he had a couple of explosive plays in the run game, had a run of 20 plus yards in the first and the second half. And his big playability is just, it's incredible. And he's so tough to tackle, and he's got a low center of gravity, I think, just because he's a shorter back. And for a guy that's like maybe 5'9", he is as tough as they get. He's tough to corral. And then there's the Florida game. You know, he busts off the 83-yard touchdown run. He ends up with 118 yards and a score. And that was his first rushing touchdown of his Arkansas career. It was his second touchdown, as he caught a touchdown pass against Auburn. But it's tough to argue that he's not Arkansas's best running back right now. And you mentioned a shameless plug about the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America on Monday. I've got as long as Arkansas's game with LSU is on schedule. I'm going to have a pretty cool feature story on Traylon Smith that drops today, and talked to his dad earlier in the week just to get to know Traylon a little bit better, what he was like growing up, kind of his upbringing, and you know, some of the hurdles and obstacles that he's had to overcome to get to this point. Something interesting that Traylon Smith's dad Troy told me is, you know, Traylon put his name in the transfer portal at Arizona State, and he was getting ready to go to Blinn Junior College. And about, you know, less than 2 weeks before he was headed to Blinn, Chad Morris called him and gave him an opportunity to play in the SEC. So that was pretty cool. They came up on the visit, and Troy used to tell Traylon all the time that he said, you're going to play for the Dallas Cowboys. You're going to get drafted by them. You're going to play for the Dallas Cowboys. They came up on their trip, and they went over to the Jerry and Gene Jones Success Center. And Troy didn't know that Jerry Jones went to school at Arkansas. And he saw the Dallas Cowboys star kind of on the I guess, the little half wall on the outside of the building. He was just like, this is the perfect spot for Traylon. And so it's worked out for him. He's been awesome, awesome this season. He's Arkansas's leading rusher through 7 games.
He has been extraordinary. And I think that something that cannot be lost from that Florida game is the fact of that because Arkansas could run the ball, I really believe that opened up those long touchdown passes to Mike Woods. I think Sam Pittman said something similar to that on his radio show on Wednesday. But I really think that establishing the run is going to make linebackers, the fakes are going to be more effective, make linebackers step up a step or two that's going to open up the pass game. And Felipe is already the most accurate quarterback in the SEC throwing the long ball. So if you can just give him even more space or even less defenders back there, then that's a recipe for success.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, I track Felipe's passes every week, and it's been kind of remarkable seeing the downfield passing success that he's had. He's thrown for 100-plus yards on those deep balls on passes 16-plus yards downfield. He's thrown for more than 100 yards and a touchdown 3 times this season. And he threw for 154 yards and 2 touchdowns on those deep balls against Florida. Obviously, both of those touchdowns were to Mike Woods, but he also had a 25-yard reception to Traylon Burks in the first half. It's been crazy. Like, he's well over 50% on those deep balls, and Traylon Burks and Mike Woods and even Davion Warren, you know, earlier in the year. You know, we hate that Davion Warren's out for the year with an ACL injury. That's kind of heartbreaking for a kid that has been so patient throughout his career. He's finally, you know, feel like he was kind of breaking out of his shell as a pass catcher. But Arkansas's top two guys have been so good in the vertical passing game.
Third down has been a very big key as well for both Arkansas offense and defense. We'll get into the defense just a little bit later, but establishing that run, if you can get 3-4 yards, if you run it on first down or even second down, that's going to make third down more manageable. And Arkansas has just not been very successful on third down this year. So I think that, again, going back to all of these things, I think that it's the offensive line being able to play together more and the fact of that they feel a little bit more comfortable every single week. I think that they are improving every single week. Now, are they the best offensive line in the SEC? No. Are they maybe even top half? Probably not. But the fact of that they are getting the consistency to play, I feel like Felipe is getting a little more time whenever he's dropping back. And they're creating a few more holes on the run game. And that will help those third down conversions. If you can pick up, you know, even 2 yards on a run, 2 extra yards on a run, you know, it takes it from 3rd and 8 to 3rd and 6, which opens up a new array of plays. Because when you drop back on 3rd and 8, almost everybody thinks you're going to pass. On 3rd and 6, yeah, you can still technically
be a little bit more flexible.
So I think that all of these things are flowing into Arkansas getting better. It's really disappointing just watching this team that they didn't get to play a full schedule this year, because I think that the improvement from August to where we are right now, which we would be preparing for This would be the second to last week of the season.
Yeah.
So we'd be preparing for that. I think that would be a pretty remarkable turnaround and improvement for this team. But with all that said, we still have to look on the bright side of the fact that Arkansas hasn't gotten an SEC game scheduled. One of the few SEC teams that has happened too. But yeah, third down is going to be key, I think, in this LSU game.
Would you believe me if I said that Arkansas is tied for the SEC lead in most third down attempts? Like, they've played third down more than any other team in the league outside of Ole Miss.
Really? So they've had
97 third down attempts.
Really?
Yep.
But they're what? Are they 11th in?
They're 11th in the league in converting, you know, 36%. But Ole Miss is third in the league at conversion. Their conversion percentage is almost 53%, but they've also had 97 third down plays. I mean, this is kind of a game that could come down, like you said, to third down, because Arkansas is 11th, LSU is 12th, and both teams are middling in the 30% range in terms of third down conversion. So it could come down to Arkansas just if Arkansas can. Sam Pittman's talked about this a lot, I think, in like his post game show that he does with Chuck Barrett. If Arkansas can get within third and four, they feel like their playbook is open. Because Kendall Browse feels plenty comfortable just turning around and handing the ball off to a guy like Treylon Smith, who's averaging like almost 6 yards a carry. I mean, it's almost the first down every time he touches the ball anyway. And Rakeem Boyd can pick up, you know, he's averaging what, like 4 yards a carry. He can get you a first down on third and short. But that just, if you get in third and manageable, it can, like you said, it can open up the playbook.
And I think third and manageable opens up the most simple play with one of the most hardest plays to execute as well in the Bryles offense, which is that RPO with a slant route running with either Mike.
The slant has been so productive. It's been so effective.
With Mike Woods or Treylon Burks running the slant route, and then you literally just have Felipe Franks back there reading it to where he's either going to give it to the running back that tried to pick up the 4 yards, or he's going to pull it and throw the slant. That has been Arkansas's bread and butter on third down. It will continue to be Arkansas's bread and butter on third down because teams can prepare for it. But if you prepare for it and know that you're trying to stop the slant, you're going to be able to run it. Because a slant route is very hard to defend. I mean, we know this. If you've played NCAA football, you know this, right?
Yeah, it's my favorite play on third down.
But if you're going to defend that slant route, more often times than not, you're not going to be able to defend that with just one man-on-man coverage. Some teams can. You know, if it comes to mind, LSU football last year, they were really good on defense and the ability to cover man-to-man. But more oftentimes than not, the receiver is going to be a corner in that situation. So you drop a linebacker back. Well, if you're dropping linebackers back, that means that there's nobody there to fill those run gaps, and that's when you hand the ball off. I think that's why that play has been so effective for Arkansas and will continue to be effective, and that's why it's just hard. It's like running the triple option. It's the same play, but because there are three different options, it is effective.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, running the option here, it's just a different kind of option. It's so effective because there's so many different plays.
Arkansas converting on third down is so big because as a defensive player, there's nothing more that you want than to get off the field after three plays and go rest again. And if Arkansas can pick up first downs on third down, move the chains, that can be kind of, I don't know if devastating is the word, but it can be kind of debilitating for a defense who's looking forward to getting off the field. But Arkansas converts, you got to stay on the field. Now Arkansas is running tempo, and you could go from, you know, being somewhat tired on third down to, okay, now I've got to like really gear up because Arkansas is coming with tempo, and they're coming at you pretty quick.
And after a first down or two, Ken O'Brien seems pretty willing to take a shot down the field, especially if he can get his offense going into a rhythm. They feel pretty comfortable with that. All right, Scotty, flipping over to the other side on defense. Arkansas has done really well this year at getting off field on fourth down, fourth in the league, but they really struggled against Florida, and that was a key to the game. They had Florida, and yeah, there were some third and shorts, but there were also some third and eights. I remember one specifically that was longer than third and 10 after a penalty against Florida that Florida was able to execute, and it is just a killer for the defense if you can't get off the field on third down, like we mentioned.
Yeah, Arkansas's defense has gotten off the field 8 times on fourth down this year.
On fourth down?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so, I mean, their opponents are still – they're 12 out of 21. But you think about that, that's 8 turnovers on downs. Like, that's pretty good. Like, I'm not real good at math, but I think that leads the league. I mean, opponents have gone for – according to CFB stats, opponents have gone for – they've gone for it on fourth down against Arkansas 21 times. That's the most. That's the most anybody's gone on fourth down against anyone else in the league. Hmm. But Arkansas leads the league in fourth down stops, which is really big. And that's kind of a testament to the kind of the grit and the toughness of Arkansas's defense. And that Arkansas got a big stop, I thought, at Florida on fourth down. You know, Julius Coates got away with a face mask, I think. But, you know, it didn't happen if it didn't call it.
Right.
You know what I mean? They got a break there. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, what's LSU got to lose at this point? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they continue to test Arkansas on fourth down. Like, make it a four-down series most every time. I mean, unless you're in some disadvantageous field position. So that could third and fourth down is going to be huge.
Yeah,
huge in this one.
That third and fourth down situation. I mean, because speaking of the fourth down and how well Arkansas has played on fourth down, that really leads into third down and how well Arkansas has been able to force teams to not convert on third down. It's something that you hope the Florida game is just an outlier, not something that's become a pattern here in the last 3 games, but becomes somewhat of an outlier, which it very well could be because Florida is good. We haven't mentioned that yet on this podcast. We mentioned a ton on the Reaction Show podcast. Florida is good. There's just not a whole lot you can do to defend them. There's not a whole lot of teams in the country that are going to be able to beat them. So you just have to balance the way that your defense performed, which I thought that they got a little lax in their zones and zone coverage. I think that's the second week in a row that we've kind of seen Arkansas get a little lax in zone coverage. But when you try to play man, Florida beat you pretty soundly, which makes sense. And you're probably going to play a lot of zone against LSU. LSU has superior athletes to Arkansas at wide receiver position.
Terrace Marshall is a problem. He's really, really good.
So how are you going to, I guess, counter that is the fact with you're going to have to play zone, which has not been a problem until recently for Arkansas. And that also might have to do with the level of competition that they are playing, the teams that can find that. But Arkansas is going to be playing against a young wide receiver, a young quarterback, something that we'll talk to Brooks Capina about. He's a writer for that covers the LSU beat, so we'll get to talk to him about that as well. But making that young quarterback make decisions and hopefully make them make the wrong one, changing a lot of reads. I feel like this is right up Barry Odom's alley.
Yeah, I think especially with a true freshman quarterback, he's going to be making his third start and his second on the road. And so, Greg Brooks said earlier in the week when he was asked about, you know, Arkansas kind of preparing for a young quarterback as opposed to some of the veterans that Arkansas has faced in recent weeks, like Jarrett Garantano, I don't think is considered a good quarterback in this league, but Kellen Mond, really good. Kyle Trask, probably the front runner for the Heisman. But no offense, but like TJ Finley's just not in that, he's not in that class. Like he's really, like he's probably in the same tier, maybe even lower than Garantano. Like you just don't have a big sample. From Finley, yeah.
The only thing that big about him is his size. He's a big unit from Ponchatoula, Louisiana.
Yeah, he is a large human. But I think Greg Brooks said that they want to bring a lot of pressure to him and try to rattle him.
Which is something Arkansas hasn't done really this year.
No. And the thing is, LSU might be getting one of their top offensive linemen back, like a guy that Ed Orgeron has said in the past is a potential first-round draft pick. I think his name is... Was it Dare?
Hang on,
I can't remember. I wrote about it on Wednesday, but I can't remember his last name. But big left tackle. He started 2 games. started two games this year. So Arkansas definitely, they want to bring pressure every week. But I think this week it's big to try to rattle a freshman on the road. And Greg Brooks said our plan is to rattle TJ Finley and bring in, he said, I hope Max Johnson comes in. Hope to bring in the backup at some point.
Dare Rosenthal. As they got.
Yep, he's a monster too. Big left tackle. So that, you know, if he comes back and he's in good enough playing shape, then I mean he's gonna be a big plus for LSU, and you know, he could be a detriment to Arkansas's pass rush.
For sure. We'll have to see how all of that plays out. See how the Arkansas defense, if they're gonna go back to their drop eight, three-man rush, or if they're going to maybe bring a little bit of pressure. It'll be interesting to see how Barry Odom game plans for the young quarterback and TJ Finley. All right, well, don't go anywhere. When we come back, Matt Jones will join us here on the Whole Hog Podcast, talk a little bit more about this Arkansas versus LSU game.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Welcome back into the Whole Hog Podcast. Seth Campbell joined now by Matt Jones. Matt, big game for the Razorbacks upcoming against LSU, and this is something that has really jumped off the page at me, is the fact that LSU hasn't played since Halloween. We're getting close to Thanksgiving now. Big layoff for the Tigers.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's interesting that I think this is the third time in 4 weeks that Arkansas is going to play a team that had at least 1 week off, you know, before its game. A&M and Arkansas were both coming off a bye week when they played on Halloween, and then Tennessee was coming off a bye week the next game. You know, so Arkansas got a little bit of experience with this. I don't know what a 3 week layoff does to a team. I would seem to think that it would make them rusty. And I know there are some other teams who have gone through, you know, something similar to this year, but I haven't really gone back and looked to see, you know, how they did in their first game back. But it gets you healthy. You know, there are some benefits to that, but you know, I think that it hurts you too, just because you get out of a rhythm. And, you know, it's almost kind of like playing another season opener or a bowl game. You know, a lot of teams, when they come out for bowl games, they look real flat because they haven't played in several weeks. And so it'll be interesting to see how LSU reacts to that when they play here on Saturday.
Matt, Scotty and I talked about it in the previous segment, but third downs have been critical for the Razorbacks, offense and defense. How big are third downs going to be in this game versus LSU?
Well, I mean, it's big in every game, you know, because it kind of dictates the flow of the game. And against Florida, Arkansas, I think they were 3 of 9 on third down, and their defense was they allowed Florida to convert 9 of 12, and that's a pretty good recipe for getting beat. And the defense third down, they've been pretty good this year, even with, you know, having that game against Florida. I think they're still getting off the field about 60% of the time. And that's fourth best in the SEC. The offense hasn't been good on third down all year. You know, I think there was one game, and I can't remember if it was I can't remember who it was against it, but I think they had one game this year where they did pretty well on third downs. But otherwise, they've been pretty pedestrian. You know, Georgia held them to a pretty poor third down percentage, and of course, Florida did the other night. They weren't great on third down against Texas A&M. And so in the games they've lost, they haven't played too well on third down. They got it going against Auburn in the second half, but you know, the first half, I think they had 4 or 5 3 and outs to start the game. And so it's a big thing. LSU, you know, it's kind of one of these deals where, you know, something's got to give, because LSU, they haven't been great getting off the field on third down defensively. I think they're 12th or 13th in the SEC right now in third down defense. And their offense has been okay on third down, but they weren't very good in their game against Auburn on third down when they played 3 weeks ago. So something's got to give Saturday, and third down really, when you kind of open up a box score and try to start telling the, you know, the story of how a game unfolded, third down is always one of the places I think you got to go to first.
Matt, you talked about something's got to give. The Arkansas defense, basically for most of the year, has been a zone defense to where they're going to drop back, only bring three or four guys and play that zone, which is for the most part been pretty successful against a few teams. But what we've heard from players this week is that, you know, they're going to try and make quarterback TJ Finley for LSU uncomfortable, which he hasn't handled pressure all that well this season. How do you see, I know you're not in the meetings or anything, but just from what you've heard and seen this week, what do you think the Razorbacks do? Do they drop back and force Finley to make mistakes that way, or do they try and speed up his clock?
Well, I think it's always the latter. When you're playing a young quarterback, I think you always want to bring pressure and not give them time to throw. You know, if you're playing a KJ Costello, who's a fifth-year senior, or Matt Corral, who's an older player, or Kyle Trask, it's a different deal, because if you bring pressure on them, they just, you know, that's what they want. They light up when they see that pressure coming. I think it's a lot different for a younger quarterback who hasn't really figured out the timing and the speed, you know, of this level. And so I would be surprised if they're not bringing a lot of pressure against Finley. Maybe they still only line up with three down linemen, but I would be surprised if you're not seeing, you know, some pretty elaborate blitz schemes coming from Odom's defense on Saturday.
Yeah, Barry Odom and the Arkansas defense definitely want to keep TJ Finley on their toes. But, I mean, it has been a quarterback rotation for the Tigers. Any shot that you think that over these past 3 weeks that Max Johnson plays some in place of TJ?
Well, maybe. I think Finley's the one who they're going to go with just because he's got more game experience. Neither of them looked great against Auburn. I think one was 11 of 25, and the other was 13 of 25 or something like that. You know, they had to throw the ball a lot because they got down by so much. But neither of them just really blew you away. I think Johnson led a touchdown drive. He led the last touchdown drive right there late in the game, and Finley threw two interceptions. You go back the week before that, and Finley looked pretty good against South Carolina. You know, had a lot of big passing plays in that game and didn't really look like they had taken a step back offensively. But I think, you know, in retrospect, you kind of look at that and say, well, South Carolina's defense wasn't very good this year. You see what Ole Miss did to them last week, and you know, their struggles on defense is what contributed to their coaching change. So I would guess they play Finley, but you never know. I mean, what are they dealing with, you know, in practice? That's, I think, you know, there was a point there where they didn't have any quarterbacks able to practice during the time that they weren't able to play. And so the thought is that both of them will play, but I would suspect that Finley will probably see more playing time against Arkansas, or at least he'll be given the opportunity to have more playing time early in the game.
That makes sense. All right, Matt. Well, we're going to let you go on this one. Scotty and I, later in the podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about some of our favorite LSU memories between Arkansas and LSU since they joined the SEC. What do you got in that department?
Well, the best game I ever went to was the 2007 game in Baton Rouge. And LSU was number one. Of course, Arkansas won 50-48 in triple overtime when Mateo Richardson intercepted a pass on a two-point try. LSU was number one, and it took the strangest confluence of events the following week with, I think, Missouri was number one, and they lost in the Big 12 championship game, and West Virginia was number two, and they got upset in the backyard brawl for LSU to get back into the national championship. But when you walked out of Tiger Stadium after that game in 2007, you would have thought a bomb had gone off in the city. There was no one around. And that is not like it is at Tiger Stadium after a game. I mean, you go out, and you know, there's a big RV park across the street over by the old baseball stadium that's, you know, always a party all weekend. You know, people are out at their cars tailgating. You know, it is as festive of a scene as you will find in college football. And you couldn't find anybody, because they all thought their national championship hopes had died that night by losing to Arkansas. In fact, Jim Hawthorne, who's the LSU play-by-play guy, or used to be, you know, his call when Richardson intercepted the pass was LSU's national championship aspirations are over. And who would have thought that, you know, 6 weeks later they were going to be the number, or going to be the first two-loss national championship team ever. So that's the one that stands out to me. You know, there have been some others. The miracle on Markham down in Little Rock, that was just an unbelievable scene in 2002. You know, I remember pretty well the game in Baton Rouge in 2015 when Arkansas won 31-14. And that game, you know, Tiger Stadium cleared out with about 13 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and I'd never seen anything like it. Those were Arkansas wins. There have been some great LSU wins in the series. I thought the 2006 game down at War Memorial Stadium, where you had the Darren McFadden touchdown run and the Trendon Holiday kickoff return on the next play, that was just an outstanding game. The 2011 game, a lot of people forget about that game. It was 1-3, and the winner of that game really put themselves maybe in the driver's seat to go to the national championship game, because Alabama was in the, you know, in the mix in the West too, at number two. So really a great series. I think that it has been the most entertaining series of any of the ones that Arkansas has been a part of since they joined the SEC. And LSU's won the majority of them. I don't know that LSU really views Arkansas as much of a threat, because, you know, they've also got Alabama, and Texas A&M's become kind of a big deal for them, and Ole Miss is a longtime rivalry. But from this side, I don't know that there's a bigger game for Arkansas fans every year than LSU. There was a span there from, you know, probably about 2001 to 2012, maybe 13, where there was not a more, you know, competitive series for either of these schools. Games, you know, decided by 1 point, 5 points, 4 points, and seemed like just about every year, every other year, there was a chance to go to Atlanta on the line. So a lot of fun. It's certainly been my favorite to watch.
All right, Matt. Well, we really appreciate you joining us here on the Whole Hog Podcast. Good insight. And yeah, those are some fantastic Arkansas versus LSU memories.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right, Matt Jones, you can check him out on wholehogsports.com. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're going to have Brooks Cabina from The Advocate join us to talk a little bit more about LSU.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back in to the Whole Hog Podcast. Seth Campbell and Scotty Borderline. We are now joined by Brooks Cabina. He is the LSU beat writer for The Advocate and NOLA News. All right, Brooks, let's just start off with, I guess, what's been some of the big news around Baton Rouge. The Title IX lawsuits that are coming against LSU, just a lot of stuff. What is the team's focus this week with all of that swirling around them?
Well, I mean, they would say their focus is on Arkansas. I mean, there's a lot of news going on, for sure. I'm sure that the coaches and the players are all working together to try and figure out, you know, just to focus on Arkansas. But, you know, not being in their meetings, I'm not sure what their approach would be. You know, this there certainly is a lot of things developing out of the program right now.
Hey, Brooks, I love wide receiver play, and I think Terrace Marshall's, you know, probably one of the top guys on the perimeter in the league. And, you know, some of Arkansas's defensive backs were, you know, talking about or kind of pumping him up this week. What kind of makes him, you know, as good as he is? What kind of stands out about his play?
Well, Well, Terrace Marshall, he's incredibly long and fast. He runs with ease. When you look at him on the field, it looks like he makes it look easy, and he's not as fast as he actually is. But it's very relative to who his great uncle was, and some of your listeners might know. You know, his great uncle was Joe Delaney. He was a rookie of the year running back for the Kansas City Chiefs, and he tragically died while drowning, trying to save some kids who were drowning as well. That's part of Terrace Marshall's life story. We have a story about that if you find that at theadvocate.com. But it relates to his personal voice as well, because his family, they say they're so similar because they're very quiet people. Like, if they didn't have to talk to anybody, they wouldn't. But his great uncle's sister, she told the same thing to Joe that she told to Terrace, was, look, once you become a star football player, you don't belong to yourself anymore. You belong to the world, to the people around you. You know, the kids that watch you, the players that are around you who don't have as much talent as you do. So you just got to suck it up. You know, I don't care if you don't want to talk. And he realizes that more now. And once things started to go wrong this year, I think these past 3 weeks, basically sitting without any games, he felt like it was his time to talk to the players and get them moving towards this Arkansas game, because at 2-3, you can't really afford to lose another game if they want to try and keep this program going the right direction. He's earned that voice with his play. With 9 touchdowns already this season, he's, you know, getting close to that 20 touchdown mark that Ja'Marr Chase set with the SEC record last year. They're not even going to play 15 games this year. So maybe he'll be able to get to that. But paired with his work ethic, and, you know, his play on the field, he's earned Ed Ogeron's respect. Whenever, Miles Brennan, their starting quarterback, went out with that abdomen injury, Terrace Marshall went to Ed Ogeron and asked who the quarterback was going to be. And Ogeron wanted to know what he had to think, which is kind of a big deal. If you think about a player having some influence on who the starting quarterback is going to be. And you can tell that they've been talking together recently, because Ogeron knew Monday that Terrace Marshall wanted to talk to the team in a players only meeting. So they had been talking. So he's probably, if you look at the offense right now with Brennan out, he's probably the biggest voice on the offensive side right now. And he's earned that.
Talking to Brooks Covina from The Advocate, LSU beat writer. Brooks, when you look at the quarterback position now that Miles Brennan is out, as you mentioned, what has TJ Finley brought to that position, good and bad?
Well, Finley, he's got we've seen that he has a strong arm. I mean, that was always what we had heard about him coming in to the season, even whenever he was a recruit, that the guy could throw it 70 yards with ease. I mean, it was almost like, you know, the Jamarcus Russell story, like, oh, he can throw off his knees for 60 yards, you know. But, you know, seeing that against South Carolina, it's not just the strong arm, it's that his deep balls can be incredibly accurate. Joe Burrow was like that last year. He could drop some of the hardest sideline outs, you know, straight into their hands. And Finley made a couple of passes like that. But he had great protection that game and a running game that allowed him to have a simplified offensive scheme and use the throws that were best suited to him. And then whenever you started seeing him play against Auburn, whose defense was, you know, they had a great scheme. Kevin Steele over there has always schemed well against LSU. You remember last year, they were the only team to hold the Tigers under 30 points with that 3-1-7 defense, which basically shut down the passing game. You know, they came again after him. They knew that the offensive line was struggling in protection, and they wanted to force TJ Finley to beat them with his arm. So they crowded the line, stopped the run game, and blitzed him enough to where he made some errors. We saw, you know, some accuracy issues. The first interception was an out route to Marshall that just sailed on him and was intercepted. And the second one was batted at the line of scrimmage. And then whenever he was pressured again, he held on to the ball and tried to keep it away from, he was trying to evade a sack and raised the ball up and it got knocked loose and recovered for a touchdown. So we saw him struggle whenever defenses came after him. So, you know, what will Arkansas do in this situation? I think that would be the game plan. Nobody's really – Finley has yet to prove that if you come after him, he can beat you with his arm and escape that if you take away the run game. So that's what I would expect to see. Now, he's had a couple of weeks to get ready for this. And LSU's offensive line just got back at starting left tackle, Dare Rosenthal, who was indefinitely suspended throughout their struggles here. So he'll have a little bit more protection. Will we see Finley, you know, have more protection? And is he more confident in the expanded playbooks in South Carolina? We'll see. But I do think it'll be a lot dependent on this run game and how effective it can be.
Brooks, what kind of year has Derek Stingley had? Because on paper, you know, it maybe looks like he's had more of an impact on special teams than anything else.
Yeah, Derek Stingley, I think this year you've seen the depth of LSU's secondary be troublesome. Stingley hasn't been enough to shut down people's passing games. I mean, we could go for a long list of all the defenders that are out this year, but you know, Stingley's done well on his own on the opposite end. But you know, this whole entire secondary, there are holes. You know, you can when you look at last year, Christian Fulton, now playing in the NFL, was his opposite corner. And then the safeties, like Kerry Vincent, opted out. Stingley's had to hold his own on this end. He's done well on special teams, but for the most part, you're seeing the troubles come out whenever. So a Bo Pelini defense likes to be able to communicate and mix up coverages to allow them to blitz or do other things within the front seven. And, you know, they haven't been able to communicate or get aligned. And that includes safeties that have been, you know, communicating with corners and telling them which checks are there. And whenever the whole secondary is not lined up or knows whether they're in man or zone, it's your All-American safety is not going to be able to save you just by being on the field and knowing that he's the only one, you know, knowing his own a deal. So that's kind of gone into the entire problem with this LSU defense. And Ogeron's called for it to be simplified, but frankly, there's not really much more simplification that a Bo Pelini defense can do at this point. So really, it's how well do these players understand their alignments and their basic plays. There have been a lot of former players who have played for Bo Pelini whenever he was here on the first time with LSU, and there's been high criticism of the players on this team and coaches involved as well if they can't learn how to play fundamental defense. So that got exacerbated against Auburn whenever the turnovers started to happen. We saw at the beginning of the game that they were starting to hold their own, be in the right place at the right time. But then whenever the game started to unravel, they returned to their same bad habits. So is this defense going to be disciplined? If it is, then Stingley can help you. If it doesn't, then he can't.
Talking to Brooks Cabina for The Advocate. Brooks, last question here, and then we'll let you go for the evening. When you think about the last game that LSU played, it was Halloween. We're less than a week from Thanksgiving now. LSU's had 3 weeks to implement, like you said, a more offense with their quarterback, a little bit maybe simplifying, if you can, that defense, like you mentioned. What do you expect to be different about this LSU team coming to Fayetteville after 3 weeks off?
You know, after Terrace Marshall's speech on Monday, I think they're going to be a little bit more prideful about what they're doing. I think you'll see a difference in their demeanor. And I think that's more important than anything right now, is because when you looked at them against Auburn, there were people cutting up on the sideline while they were getting destroyed. And people were not happy about that. Ogeron was not happy about that. You know, there was a long post-game rant by a former player that was just, you know, digging into everybody about, like, you're playing for more than just yourself. It'll be interesting to see how much energy will come out of a 11 a.m. kick on a Saturday morning. But effort and, you know, not quitting in a game, that's the things that people are looking for with LSU this week. After 3 weeks off, is their mindset different than it was against Auburn? We've seen in the past at Ogeron's teams, let's say, you know, after their Mississippi State loss in 2017, they were similarly destroyed. And then they had their loss against Troy. They had to change their demeanor, and they came back and they beat teams like Florida and Auburn, games that they weren't supposed to. And a lot of that had to do with effort. I think that's what you'll look for on Saturday. And I expect that it'll change. I feel like, talking to players earlier this week, that's been a refocusing point. But, having been out of practices due to quarantine, I mean, most of the team couldn't practice all of last week because they were sitting out. Are they going to be as prepared this week? Most of the players came back yesterday for practice. I think they've had plenty of time to, game plan, look at tape and film, and I think they're still conditioned because even if they're in quarantine, they can still work out and run together with the other people who are in quarantine. But they haven't been able to get that practice, those reps on the field, to take what they've learned, off the field to put that on there. So are they going to be prepared mentally? That's one thing. But on the field, you know, that quarantine stuff kind of kept them out of it. But I understand Arkansas is dealing with that as well. So who knows who's out for that game for them. So this game will be pretty interesting.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be a lot of question marks, especially for Arkansas. Like you said, we have no idea who is going to play and not play. Well, Brooks, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us here on the Whole Hog Podcast.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
Thanks, Brooks.
All right, that is Brooks Cabina. You can check him out on the Advocate website. He is a beat writer for LSU football. Don't go anywhere, because when we come back, Scotty and I are going to recap some of the best Arkansas LSU moments here on the Whole Hog Podcast.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Welcome back in to the Whole Hog Podcast. Seth Campbell, Scotty Borderline. We're just going to have a little bit of fun as we wrap up the Whole Hog Podcast. Arkansas LSU battle for the boot. They've had some pretty good games ever since Arkansas joined the SEC. Obviously, there's a few that stick out more than others, Scotty. But we're going to just kind of recap some of the ones that you remember, I remember, which aren't as many as some of you that are listening might remember. Some of the games that we hold near and dear to our hearts, and I'll go ahead and start. First of all, before I started, Scotty and I were trying to get the recipe before we even get into all of this. This is a little aside, but we were trying to get the recipe for the vegetable mix that Sam Pittman had been drinking all week long. Scotty said that he'd be willing to try it here on the podcast. So I'm going to hold him to that whenever we find out that recipe, because I really want to know what this superfood that Sam
Pittman... I can just go get a green drink, I guess, like what Matt has been drinking those.
Yeah.
I think in the past, kind of help him feel a little bit better. Maybe I could do that, and then, you know, maybe a little drop of honey in there.
Okay.
You can make it work.
Okay.
I might do it on the pregame show.
That way we have video.
We should do it on the pregame show for Missouri.
We should do that. We'll think about that. Or you could do like one of those things with the open box to where like you have four different things and you got to like figure out which one is which. And we have different different vegetable mixes and see which one you like the best. This is a good idea. All right. Well, I'll start us off. One of my very first memories of Razorback football, again, I know I'm dating myself a little bit, but was the 2001 Miracle on Markham. What a fantastic game between Arkansas and Matt Jones. Arkansas and LSU, but Matt Jones being the hero with the pass to DeCorey Birmingham that gave Arkansas the win and let them go to the SEC championship game. What a great game. But I will say one that I hold fonder in my memories, not because it had more significance, but because I was there, Scotty, was the second Miracle on Markham, Casey Dick to London Crawford. I was in the opposite end zone of where it happened, and I just remember him throwing it up into the corner, everybody standing up, and I couldn't tell if he caught it or not until I saw the reaction from the fans on the other side. It was a fantastic game. And it was a game that I didn't really think I was going to until about an hour and a half to 2 hours before. I was from Little Rock, and one of my friends from high school was just like, I guess it went high school then, but he went to my school. And he said, hey, I got an extra ticket for you and your dad. Do y'all want to come? And so we bolted down to downtown and watched that game. What a classic.
Yeah, that was fun. I think about the Ryan Mallett to Jarius Wright touchdown pass in 2010.
Oh, man.
And in 2011, I was a freshman at Arkansas, and I hadn't gotten into student journalism yet, so I wasn't covering Arkansas football at that point. I was back home in South Arkansas sitting at my family's outdoor kitchen watching the game and remember Alonzo Highsmith taking a fumble return for a touchdown. Arkansas goes up 14-0, and you know, everybody in the state, and I think a lot of people nationally, were like, this Arkansas team is for real. Like, it's got, like, it's on track to go to
the Natty,
possibly the BCS National Championship game.
That is one of the things I was going to mention is, you know, it's so very Arkansas of us to mention losses and good memories of a game, but the hype around that 2-3 game against Alabama, against LSU, to where literally whoever won that game, if LSU won, then that was the year that LSU beat Alabama, so they were going to have to go to the SEC championship. But if Arkansas won, Arkansas would have just was ranked number 3 in the BCS, had just beaten the number 2 team, and wouldn't have to go to the SEC championship game to risk losing there. They were almost guaranteed a spot in the national championship game. The national championship game. Arkansas was that close. And then, like you said, Arkansas's up 14-0. And you're going, oh man. I remember being in my living room watching that game and just going, I guess this is just, like you said, just such so Arkansas of me going, oh Lord, how are we going to blow this?
Yeah, then Tyrann Mathieu happened.
Oh, golly, the Honey Badger. And that's how we ended up with LSU versus Alabama part 2, and LSU didn't make it past the 50-yard line that in that national championship game.
Yeah, then I remember 2014. You know, I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Arkansas's football program took out a big full-page ad in the back of the Traveler. And I remember being on the field. I was working with the Traveler then, being on the field when the clock hit zeros and the team runs across the field, grabs the boot. And I mean, just the sea of people on the field was crazy. I know people that grabbed a pylon from the field. And I mean, I grabbed one of the little handshakers and I still have it from that game. They passed those out in the student section beforehand. I still have one of those, and I remember I was of age at that point, and so Dixon Street was pretty fun that night. That was a night I'll never forget. That was an incredible college memory that I have.
How did you get? So you were working for the Trav at that time. You said you were on the sideline.
Yeah, I mean, you just with 5 minutes left in the game. You know, in a normal world, you can go down to the field. You know, with less than 5 minutes left in the game, and then before you get escorted into post game stuff.
I'm just curious, how did you get to the post game stuff with them? Everybody rushing the field.
Oh, I mean, the post game stuff is it was
Oh, so it was like right by the locker room. You were right there.
Yeah, I mean, it was still, I mean, think back, that was still in the old Burrell Center. Mm-hmm. And so the post-game stuff was in that big auditorium that they had and all that. I mean, I think Arkansas's SID did a pretty good job of kind of rounding reporters and media people up and getting us into that room. That was a fun night for interviews.
I think I was a high school senior when that happened, which is also leads to a fun memory the next year where Arkansas, you know, you have that big win, that momentous win, and you go back to Death Valley, and then you make LSU evacuate a night game early, their fans, with a huge win. I can't remember the score of that one, but it was like 30-14 in Death Valley on a Saturday night. And
people, I went to that game with my dad.
People are leaving at fourth quarter with 10 minutes left to go. That was a really cool memory as well.
That game was pretty cool because my dad is from Camden, and Dominic Reed, also from Camden, had a really long, I think he had a big long touchdown run in that game. So that was pretty neat. It was really fun to watch a South Arkansas kid, you know, it's kind of shine in a big game like that.
Arkansas won with the all reds, the red mm-hmm. pants and the red tops. I remember that. They were showing out. Let's see, what year was that?
2015,
it was 31-14 in Baton Rouge.
Yep.
And that was the last time Arkansas played Les Miles. Big fun fact here, they've never beaten Ed Orgeron as head coach.
Yeah, Ed Orgeron got asked about that on the SEC coaches teleconference this week. So you've had all kinds of success against Arkansas. Like, what's the key to that? You know, he just kind of gave props to, I think, the time that he spent in Arkansas and name dropped a couple guys who have been pretty influential. And I think Ken Hatfield was one of them. I think he said he's planning on seeing Ken Hatfield before.
I thought that's what I heard
before the game too. So that'd be pretty neat.
And really, the games haven't been close with the exception of the first year of Chad Morris in 2018 was 24-17. Arkansas lost by a touchdown. Besides that, with Ed Orgeron at LSU, it's been Arkansas lost by 28, 23, and then last year when they lost by a lot, which is 36.
I remember the 2012 game that was in Fayetteville. I remember Jarvis Landry making one of the most absurd catches that I've ever seen for a touchdown. One hand, got a couple feet down, and then he just, I think he hit the goalpost. I mean, that was an unbelievable catch. That LSU team had Odell Beckham, I believe, and Jarvis Landry on it, and Zach Mettenberger, I believe.
Yeah, I remember the 2012 game. That was the first game that Arkansas played LSU in Fayetteville. Since they had been in the SEC, I went to that game as well, and it was a close game. It was 20-13.
Yeah, Arkansas had a shot late. I think they had the ball in the final seconds, just couldn't make anything happen with it.
Well, that's kind of story of their lives with John L. Smith in it. All right. Well, Scotty, some good memories. Hopefully, there'll be another one made on Saturday, regardless of how the score turns out. I have a feeling that this one's going to be close because a lot of Arkansas LSU games are. And Arkansas needs to take that boot back, man. It's been 4 years. I remember the first time that LSU took it after Arkansas won back-to-back in 14 and 15. I was on the sideline in 16 for the game in Fayetteville. And LSU rushed over and grabbed the boot. Like, they were really excited about it. And a lot of people want to knock on this game as not really being a part of a real rivalry, but LSU felt it then. They may not feel it right now because they've had it for 4 years. It's not Ohio State, Michigan, and Alabama, Auburn, to where even if, you know, Alabama's been dominant in that game except for a few times, or really the big example there is Ohio State just being absolute dominant over Michigan. That game doesn't mean any less to them. Maybe with this rivalry means a little less to LSU because Arkansas hasn't won. But you make it competitive, win this game, and there's a lot really at stake. Arkansas trying to get bowl eligible, which, I mean, all teams are technically bowl eligible. They have the amount of wins. It's just if you get that invite to a bowl, LSU's kind of in that same boat, especially, as we mentioned in the last segment, since they haven't played since October 31st. There's a lot at stake for both of these teams, so I think it'll be a good matchup, 11 a.m. in Fayetteville and Donald W. I think this is going to be a memorable game.
It'd be nice. I know a lot of people don't like the 11 a.m. kicks, but I'm going to be happy to be you know, done with work on Saturday at like 5 or 6.
I'm a fan.
Enjoy the heck out of that.
I'm a fan of 11 a.m. kickoffs for that reason and that reason alone. When I worked for the athletic department, though, I worked during my time in college, which was the end of the Bielema era and the Chad Morris era. And so we all know that there were a lot of 11 a.m. kicks during that. We had to get to the stadium 4 hours before the game.
Wow.
So,
and then you didn't probably leave until a couple hours after.
It was an hour and a half. So we had to record the post game, the show that you see on Sunday nights.
Yeah.
It was the Brett Bielema show. It turned into the Chad Morris show.
In the left lane with Chad Morris.
And I left before it turned into the Barry Lunny show. And then now is the Sam Pittman show. But regardless of all of that, I did not like 11 a.m. kickoffs then, because that meant you had to be there at 7 a.m., which means you had to wake up at 6 to get there in time. But besides that, it's not bad. 11 a.m. kickoff for me. And it's, you got to take your dues, Arkansas. You know, you haven't had an 11 a.m. kickoff all year long, and you're going to get 2 back-to-back maybe. I have a hard time believing that they'll put that Alabama game at 11 a.m., though, because it's
Arkansas
Alabama.
Fans this year deserve to crack their first cold one early.
Dang straight. You can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning, Scotty. All right. And with that sage advice, we are going to leave you here on the Whole Hog Podcast. For Scotty Bordelon, I am Seth Campbell. Big thanks to Brooks Cabina and Matt Jones for joining us here on the Whole Hog Podcast. Make sure if you like the podcast to like it, subscribe, rate, all of those stuff that we ask you every single week. But it is important because it helps people find the podcast and helps Arkansas fans become educated just like you are. And if you have a big Razorback fan in your life and they're not listening to the Whole Hog Podcast, make sure to mention it to them. We enjoy word of mouth advertising. Well, for Scotty Bordelon again, I am Seth Campbell saying so long. We will see you back here next week.